Bonjour, and welcome to Bon Appetit and Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Ellen Ward. Today I'll begin reading from the August 2025 issue, starting with a letter from the editor. Editor-in-Chief Jamila Robinson shares what's on her mind this month. The only thing more satisfying in summer than just churned vanilla ice cream that leaves a little pool of vanilla beans at the bottom of a bowl is, well, another kind of ice cream. I often make a 2-quart batch of vanilla custard that can be divided, then spun into different flavors and textures by the half pint. Vanilla is the perfect base for strawberries or other fresh fruit, roughly chopped dark chocolate, or even a bit of pistachio cream. Caramelized cherries with a bit of granola mixed in. Honey, lavender, and fig is always an easy win for a waffle cone. Salted caramel makes an unexpected layer for ice cream sandwiches. Throughout the summer, my 3 ice cream makers get serious workouts. Modern ice cream makers are so versatile and freeze so quickly. I can make multiple frozen treats in minutes, turning my weekend gatherings with friends into ice cream socials. While the countertop machine is whipping blueberry frozen yogurt, the stand mixer attachment is churning fudgy chocolate sorbet for my vegan friends. There are no wait times between batches. I just swap the canister if I want to serve espresso gelato after dinner. When I was a kid, making ice cream in the summer was a weekend-long process that taught patience. It started with making custard and waiting hours to infuse vanilla into cream on the stove, and then waiting even longer for the custard to chill to just above freezing. We couldn't make the ice cream until the next day, when it was churned with crushed ice and rock salt by hand on the back porch until it reached a soft serve consistency, then put in the freezer to set for another 4 to 6 hours. After a day at the beach and later burgers, barbecue, and badminton, we'd finally get a scoop of vanilla dolloped onto shortcakes or pound cake and topped with fruit. If you wanted strawberry ice cream, you'd have to wait until next week. Continuing with the ice cream theme is the next article, Jenny's Splendid Next Move. The celebrated ice cream maker sets her sights on the world of fiber, by Halle Bay Ramdin. What's the thing Jenny Britton needs most in her life right now? The answer to that question changes with the time, day, and seasons. At one point, she craved community and a place to express the creativity surging through her. That's how she arrived at ice cream, opening a scoop shop that she built into a beloved brand and empire with locations in 29 cities and pints of ice cream in grocery stores across the U.S. During the pandemic, long walks in the woods and a daily habit of eating lots of fruit led Jenny to realize what she needed was something simpler, fiber. After she had an inkling, we needed it too. Now, 23 years after founding Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams, she is back with a new offering. Flaura, that's F-L-O-U-R-A, is a fiber company, one that luxuriates in flavor and roots itself in the senses. Its first product is a fiber bar with the same name. It features 13 grams of fiber and 12 whole plants, such as watermelon and apples, all sourced from food trimmings previously destined for waste. In the end, this fiber bar is meant to deliver on the same promise she made with ice cream, to make you feel good. We caught up with Jenny to hear all about it. How did you arrive at fiber as your next project? JB, it's a bit of a long story, but I started eating a lot of blueberries and I started to feel better than ever before. My business partner Mark was like, the blueberries are fiber. My whole body started changing because of fiber, and the more I learned, the more I wanted to make sure I was getting enough. Something like 95% of people are deficient in fiber. Many of the chronic illnesses we have lead back to the fact that the industrial food system has removed fiber from our diets. So this ends up being a roundabout way of saying whatever my most pressing need is kind of becomes my whole life. How did food become the pathway to a solution and transformation for you? JB. I've always been very aware of my sensorial thinking or wisdom. I think that's probably one of the reasons I fell in love with ice cream, because it is so deeply sensory. Being in the world of ice cream for so long is probably why I felt like there's a food product there, and you know that I'm probably the best one to make a fiber bar now. Is there a direct sensory experience attached to your new bars? JB. The first thing is scent. They have a sort of candied fruit aroma. I love it when I'm on an airplane, and as soon as I open one, a little cloud of raspberry rose or brambleberry lavender fills that space. I wanted to make something that was really beautiful and also very different from what's in the nutritional bar space. When I first learned about the bars, it felt like they were creating their own category. JB, with Flora, we want you to taste and feel the color of each bar. In the bar world, everything's brown, especially when it comes to fiber bars. Most bars are date paste, which is brown, but it's also a very specific flavor. I mean, of course we love dates, but to a point. Amen. JB. Ours are made with an apple base, and you can layer other flavors on top of that. Do you feel like what you're doing is disruptive? JB. If you look at the bar aisle, there are still hundreds of companies launching every day in the protein space. To me, that represents the past. It's not that it's not important, but why are you walking down somebody else's already carved path? When you start to look and ask yourself what's actually important right now, it's that people eat fiber. Flora would be disruptive, even if we were just using single source fiber the way that other fiber companies use psyllium. But we're 10 steps ahead of that with the inclusion of whole plants. Say more about that. JB. Your microbiome really wants diverse fiber. We're working with fruit trimmings, fresh and whole fruits and vegetables, and more. What's going to nurture the diverse population of microbes living inside of you to nurture you to feel better is a diversity of fiber sources. When I think of Jenny's, I think of seasonality and produce. How is that showing up in how you're producing these bars? JB. From the very beginning, we were in the farmer's market buying flats of strawberries on Saturdays when they were perfect for 2 weeks in Ohio. Over time, we started buying an entire field, and our farmer was growing special strawberries so that we could have strawberries coming in at a certain clip. Understanding what that looks like definitely led to an immediate connection and to the facility where we exist now. FNS Fresh Foods is in Vineland, New Jersey, and that's where we source all our ingredients. It's 600,000 square feet. It's an unimaginable scale of produce and trimmings byproduct, including watermelon rinds. Seeing that scale made me immediately think of my grandmother, who used to pickle watermelon rinds. She had no idea that there were prebiotics or the microbiome existed, but she knew eating them was good for you. That was an aha moment for me and connected me to my history of processing produce. The branding and visuals for Flora are beautiful. How are you packaging and presenting all the creativity behind Flora to your customers and audience? JB, I was in Pompeii 2 years ago and saw this beautiful fresco of the goddess Flora, who's about spring, blooming, and rebirth. Letting go is hard, but also it's about moving on and allowing for the new. I like this idea of putting all my stuff out there as a gift to the world. Then we listen and learn about what is resonating. It becomes an act of co-creation. Jenny's is not just me. It's thousands of amazing people who are influencing what we become. And that's what I love so much about literally blooming. Next, I'll be reading The Stir Fry We All Agree On. All four of us, three partners, one baby, have our food preferences. This dinner works for everyone. By Daniel Lavery. A few years ago, the three of us, Lily, Grace, and self, decided to have a baby together. Lily introduced the idea to the floor. Grace and I unanimously seconded the motion, and baby Rocco appeared more or less shortly thereafter. At present, his diet is mostly milk, although from time to time he will condescend to be presented with a fragment of grated apple or swipe of yogurt. His demeanor in such moments is one of lordly courtesy. I shall permit you to make me a gift of this impedimenta, since you seem so bent upon it. But it is to please you, and not myself, that I do it. As a result, mealtime is probably the aspect of our shared life that has been the least altered by his arrival. Our biggest challenge is that we are all old first-time parents, each with very decided ideas about what we like to eat and when. Collectively, we have over 120 years of ingrained habits that none of us want to alter. Grace can't eat eggs or dairy and loves a roasted haunch of animal. Lily prefers vegetarian food. I am allergic to shrimp, although this allergy is merely physical. Spiritually, I can handle it perfectly well. Worse yet, I'm the type who has to eat breakfast within an hour of rising or I start chewing the countertops, and I could happily eat dinner at 5 p.m. or earlier. Meanwhile, Grace and Lily hold a monstrous sort of European attitude toward meals. Breakfast, they could either take or leave, and they often leave it. I don't even want to tell you what time they start talking about making dinner. This is why we share only about one out of every four meals. I suspect eventually we will need to achieve a greater degree of synchronization someday. Despite our mealtime independence, we're all concerned with doing our fair share in this postpartum period. Grace and me especially, since Lily did all the childbearing. Grace goes in for the ambitious home pantry stuff. The counters, windowsills, and half of the back patio are littered with her various fermentation and salt-curing projects, homemade soy sauce, garum, and something that looks like rice but smells of apricot. I'm more inclined toward the role of short-order cook, ready to improvise with whatever happens to be on hand. I have caught myself listing the contents of the refrigerator to the others, as if they weren't at the store with me when we bought groceries, and I wonder who I think I'm helping. There's that good tofu behind the corn. I could go get some milk if we're out of milk, but we're not out of milk. Lily is normal, both by comparison and in her own right. She bounced back shockingly well from childbirth and is always taking the baby out on hikes, lashed to her back like a shipping container. Under ordinary circumstances, she cooks quite a lot, but in our newfound parenthood, she gets crowded out between my and Grace's bids for helpful one-upmanship. I'm making stew. I'll text the group at 9 a.m. And since Grace can't compete with that directly, she'll counter with, "Don't forget, this Sunday I want to have so-and-so over for dinner and roast something in hay," and so on. I counter with leeks a la grec, goulash the color of bricks, pork chops with anchovy butter, zucchini rice, braised cabbage. It's very simple why. I want to be the baby's favorite. I want both Lily and Grace to privately think of me as the best one. I want our dogs to always sleep on my feet in bed and nobody else's. And I want everyone to find this obsession with being adored to be a likable quality in itself, instead of off-putting and suffocating. Occasionally, I remember to turn all this off. In those moments, I make something easy rather than something that only looks easy, like scrambled eggs, pantry pasta, or stir-fried mushrooms. The latter really is easy. I already have the ingredients 99% of the time. Mushrooms please everyone. They're meaty but suitable for vegetarians. They cook up fast. They taste pleasant and odd, like the earth. I feel good about handing a seared goblet of mushroom to the baby and watching him wave it around in his fat little fist before scraping it against his 8 teeth, 4 on top, 4 on bottom. I don't want to invite anyone over for this dish. It's not that impressive. But I do want everyone in the house to eat it and be quietly pleased. So quietly pleased that they don't even have to tell me. Here is Daniel's recipe for saucy mushroom stir fry, which yields 4 servings. The tangy, spicy umami sauce is the real hero in this dish. Japanese barbecue sauce, like Bachan's, does the heavy lifting. It tends to be thinner and not as smoky as American barbecue sauce and works better here. But you can use whatever you have. Even ketchup works in a pinch. The ingredients you'll need are 2 tablespoons seasoned rice vinegar, 2 tablespoons soy sauce, 1 tablespoon chili crisp, 1 tablespoon Japanese barbecue sauce such as Bachan's, 1 tablespoon mirin, sweet Japanese rice wine, 1 tablespoon cornstarch, 2 tablespoons vegetable oil divided, 1 small onion, thinly sliced kosher salt, freshly ground pepper, 1 pound mixed fresh mushrooms such as shiitake, trumpet, oyster, maitake, and or beach, sliced into bite-sized pieces, 2 tablespoons unsalted butter, 1 quarter teaspoon toasted sesame oil. Toasted sesame seeds or norikomi furikake and or thinly sliced scallions optional, and steamed rice or cooked rice noodles for serving. Here are the directions. Stir together vinegar, soy sauce, chili crisp, barbecue sauce, and mirin in a small bowl. Set sauce aside. Stir together cornstarch and 2 tablespoons water in a small bowl. Set slurry aside. Heat 1 tablespoon vegetable oil in a large cast iron skillet over medium low. Add onion and season with salt and pepper. Cook, stirring occasionally until softened, 8 to 10 minutes. Transfer to a plate. Heat remaining 1 tablespoon vegetable oil in same skillet over medium high. Add mushrooms, season lightly with salt, sauce is salty, and pepper. Cook, stirring and pressing down on mushrooms occasionally and adding more oil as needed if pan looks dry until softened and crisp and golden around edges, 8 to 10 minutes. They will release liquid. Let it evaporate and keep cooking mushrooms until browned. Reduce heat to medium-low. Mix in cooked onion, then stir in reserve sauce. Give reserve slurry a quick stir if needed, then drizzle over and cook, stirring until sauce starts to thicken. This will happen almost immediately. Add 1/4 cup water and cook, stirring and adding a little more water to thin if needed until sauce thickens to your preferred consistency. Add butter and cook, stirring until melted and sauce is glossy, 2 to 3 minutes. Remove pan from heat. Drizzle 1/4 teaspoon sesame oil over stir fry and top with sesame seeds or furikake and or scallions. Serve over rice or noodles. Daniel Lavery is a New York Times bestselling author and publisher of biweekly literary newsletter, The Chatner, on Substack. This article and recipe have been included as part of Bon Appetit's 4th trimester, a series where parents share the meals that nourish them postpartum. For more, head to bonappetit.com/4th-trimester. For a refreshing follow-up, here is Froyo Fix. Make this matcha berry frozen yogurt on a moment's notice by Shilpa Uskokovic. I love a project bake, but sometimes I need a sweet treat that I can make after work and enjoy shortly after. To that end, I've been making frozen yogurt cups repeatedly since I fine-tuned the recipe. They're lightning fast to put together and outrageously refreshing. Wading through the trenches of summer heat deserves an icy reward at the end of the day. It goes like this. Blend a single serving cup of plain Greek yogurt with about a cup of frozen berries, a splash of cream if you want, and a few spoons of sugar. Freeze. Done. Much like a classic French yogurt cake where the ingredients are measured directly in the yogurt cup, I found that a heaped yogurt cup's worth of frozen fruit is exactly the right amount to yield something fruity and creamy but not watered down. A short spell in the freezer takes it from, is this a smoothie bowl, to Do you have a froyo machine? The white chocolate matcha shell on top is entirely unessential, but irresistibly fun. A vibrant green sheath splashed over the pink yogurt, resembling the layered lattes we know and love. You might think of making several of these fruity cups and holding them in the freezer as a gift for future you. I tried that too, but alas, the yogurt turns icy if kept long term. A good reminder that some things are best enjoyed in the moment, like summer itself. How it's made. Puree yogurt from one 5.3-ounce container, plain whole milk Greek yogurt, reserve container, 1 1/4 cups frozen strawberries and or raspberries, about 6 ounces, 2 tablespoons heavy cream, if using, 2 tablespoons sugar, and pinch of kosher salt. In a blender, pushing down with a tamper or rubber spatula as needed. Doing this will help mixture blend well without getting soupy, until smooth but still quite firm. It should be the consistency of a very thick milkshake. Scrape back into reserved yogurt container or another freezer-safe container. Cover and freeze until firm to the touch, at least 30 minutes and up to 2 hours. Just before serving, microwave 2 tablespoons coarsely chopped white chocolate and 1 teaspoon coconut oil in a small, microwave-safe bowl until melted, about 45 seconds. Add 1/2 teaspoon matcha and whisk until smooth. Let cool. Pour white chocolate mixture over frozen yogurt and let sit until a firm shell forms before eating. Yields 1 serving. I'll conclude today with Signature Summer recipes by Kendra Vaculin. Some recipes are so clever, so delicious, so satisfying that they instantly earn a spot in your repertoire. They're the dishes your guests start craving as soon as they get an invite to your place, the ones lovingly remembered with your name attached. We crafted a warm weather lineup of those soon-to-be signature recipes ready to go on rotation till you're cooking each one by heart. They're citrus glazed ribs that only need a brief finish on the grill, leaving you free to dig in with your guests. Sides that get better as they sit. One highly customizable simple drink that serves everyone in your crowd, plus a casual dessert that will remind you of a late July sunset. It's an all-hits, no-skips menu for happier hosting all summer long. Kelsey Jane Youngman. Marinated grilled peppers. These smoky and sweet peppers check all my boxes. They're easy to make, do-ahead friendly, and able to complement pretty much any warm weather main I might have on the menu. The marinade, our go-to red wine vinaigrette, hits the peppers after they're grilled, which means you don't need to compromise on developing delicious char to infuse the veggies with maximally tangy flavor. To finish, torn hunks of mozzarella and a few sprigs of fresh oregano turn the dish into something more than a simple side. Elena Chu. Bicycle Bandit. Streamlining is the key to relaxed hosting. This riff on the bicycle thief, gin, Campari, grapefruit, seltzer, swaps out fresh juice for store-bought grapefruit soda. The genius here is that you can mix the gin and Campari components ahead and set it out with bottles of soda so your friends can fix their drink however they like. Guests who want to go low ABV can go heavier on the mixer, and those who don't want alcohol at all can sip the soda on its own. Want to go boozier? Swap out the soda for Prosecco, or go darker with a splash of sweet vermouth for Negroni vibes. This setup offers a whole range of options, all without stocking an entire bar cart. Joe Sevier. Chipotle citrus ribs. My main dish needs to be as breezy as my hosting style, which is why I turn to these ribs again and again. Sticky, sweet, and deeply tender, they're just plain fun to eat. But it's really the recipe's technique that won my loyalty. By cooking the ribs completely in a foil packet in the oven, I eliminate any anxiety I might feel about getting meat to a certain temperature over an open flame. The grilling is for vibes only. I flip them and pull them as soon as they've hit my desired degree of char. Seconds later, I'm licking barbecue sauce off my fingers right alongside my guests. Kindervakalin, classic coleslaw. A good coleslaw brings out the best in a main dish. Its fresh, vinegary crunch provides exquisite contrast to crispy fried chicken or snappy sausages. Get a forkful of slaw and meat together, and it's all there for you. Hot and cold, rich and tart, who can complain? This classic version from Hattie B's in Nashville hits all the right flavor notes, and it's easy to adjust the mayo to your preferred creaminess level. I can't imagine a cookout without it. Wilder Davies. Here's the recipe for that classic coleslaw. It yields 8 servings. Though many grocery stores sell bags of pre-shredded coleslaw mix and shredded carrots, they often sit on the shelf for too long and dry out, so it's worth it to do the prep work yourself. After you quarter and core the cabbage, thinly slice it with a knife, mandolin, or the slicing blade of a food processor. For the carrots, a box grater also works. Like many slaws, this one's best when allowed to sit for a bit. Make it ahead if you can. You'll need 1 cup mayonnaise, 1.5 tablespoons apple cider vinegar or white vinegar, 1 tablespoon honey, 3/4 teaspoon celery seeds, 1 teaspoon diamond crystal or 1/2 teaspoon Morton kosher salt, 1/2 teaspoon freshly ground pepper, 1/2 medium green cabbage, very thinly sliced, about 4 cups, medium red cabbage, very thinly sliced, about 4 cups, 2 medium carrots, peeled, julienned, or coarsely grated. Whisk mayonnaise, vinegar, honey, celery seeds, salt, and pepper in a large bowl. Add green and red cabbage and carrots and toss to coat. Cover coleslaw and chill until ready to serve. Do ahead. Coleslaw can be made 8 hours ahead. Keep chilled. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Bon Appetit on Demand on Sun Sounds of Arizona. The articles and recipes which I've been reading are from the August 2025 issue. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Ellen Ward, saying adieu for now. Please be sure to check out more of the wonderful variety programming available to you from Sun Sounds, both on demand and also through streaming.